They turned onto the old road, parallel with the highway, and again onto the wandering two-lane up toward the camp. The first 8 miles were as bad as before. Icy humps and dips, reversed cambers, constant deviations from straight. Then, as before, the horizon changed. The clear, gray concrete, massively wide, infinitely long, the aerodynamic berms of snow, the visible wind howling above the surface. Holland slowed and bumped up on the new level and stopped and kept his foot on the brake, like a plane waiting to launch. He said, "You see what you want to see, don't you? I was here a dozen times in my life and thought this was just a road. Kind of fancy, maybe, but I guess I figured, hey, that's the military for you." "It used to be narrower," Peterson said. "That's what made it hard to see. The winds put dirt all over it. Only the middle part was ever used. These guys plowed it for the first time in 50 years. Not just snow, they pushed the dirt off." "It's a piece of work," Holland said. "That's for sure." "That's for damn sure," Reacher said. "It's got to be a yard thick. By volume, it's probably the largest man-made object in South Dakota." They all looked a minute longer, and then Holland took his foot off the brake, and the snow chains chattered and the car rolled on. 2 whole miles. The tan shapes of the huts loomed up, with the slate roof of the stone building standing tall behind them, under its cap of snow. Holland parked about where Reacher had. The scene ahead was different. No people, no trucks, no bikes, just the empty plowed spaces and the wooden huts, all forlorn and abandoned among them. They all got out of the car, put their hats on, put their gloves on, zipped up their coats. The temperature was still dropping, way below 0 degrees, and the wind made it worse. The cold struck upward through the soles of Reacher's boots. His face went numb after seconds. Holland and Peterson were putting on a show of taking it in their stride, but Reacher knew they had to be hurting. Their faces were mottled red and white, and they were blinking, and they were coughing and gasping a little. They all headed straight for the stone building. It looked no different than it had in the morning, partly forbidding, partly just plain weird. Peterson tried the door. It didn't move. He rubbed the new frost off the keyhole with his thumb, the same way Reacher had. He said, "There are no scratches here. The lock wasn't in regular use." "Didn't need to be," Reacher said. "They unlocked it a year ago and relocked it this morning." "So where's the key?" "That's a good question," Holland said. "They took it with them." Reacher said, "I don't think they did." "Why wouldn't they?" "Because this place is getting sold. Wouldn't they have been told to leave the key for the new owner?" "So where is it?" "Under the mat, probably." "There is no mat." "Under a flower pot, then." "What flower pot?" "Figure of speech," Reacher said. "People leave keys in prearranged locations." All three of them turned a slow circle, looking at everything there was to see, which wasn't much, just snow and concrete and the huts and the building itself. "What's it going to look like?" Peterson asked. "Just a key?" "Big," Reacher said. "It's a blast door, so the lock will be complex. Lots of moving parts, hard to turn. So the key will be big and strong. Probably T-shaped, like a clock key. Probably made out of some kind of fancy steel. Probably cost the Pentagon $1,000 all on its own." "Maybe they buried it in the snow. We have a metal detector in the car. But I'm guessing the Russian guy from Brooklyn doesn't, which means it isn't in the snow. That's no kind of customer relations. You can't ask a guy to dig around in a snowbank for an hour." "So where is it?" There were stone ledges and carved moldings and Gothic features all over the building. Eye level and below was too obvious. Reacher walked a circuit and ran his hands along everything up to about 8 feet off the ground. Nothing there. And anything higher would be inaccessible, unless the Russian was figuring on bringing a folding ladder. Reacher stopped walking and looked around all over again and said, "It has to be somewhere definite, like under the third thing from the left or the fourth thing from the right." Peterson said, "What kind of thing? Hut, bed, anything. Can't we just jimmy the door with a tire iron? It's a blast door, designed to stand up to a big pressure wave. But we'd be pulling outward, not pushing inward. Pressure waves are followed by vacuums. Compression, and then rarefaction. Compression pushes in, rarefaction sucks back out, and just as hard. Both ways around, that's a strong door." Peterson said, "So, we better start searching. What's your lucky number?" "3. "So, start with the third hut under the third mattress." "Counting from where?" Reacher paused. "That's another good question. Front row, from the left, probably. But ultimately, any counting system could be called subjective, and therefore potentially confusing. The only real objectivity would be in saying the nearest or the farthest." "From where?" "Here, the locked door." "That's assuming it's in a hut at all. It's not in the snow, and it can't be in the building itself. What else is there?" Peterson headed for the nearest hut. The first in the back row, opposite the second in the front row. The first one Reacher had checked that morning. The door was unlocked. Peterson pushed it open and stepped inside. Reacher and Holland followed him. The burlap drapes were still at the windows. Everything else portable was gone. There was nothing to see except the 12 cots, now stripped back to striped blue mattress ticking and dull iron frames. The place looked sad and abandoned and empty. But it was warm. The paraffin heater had its burner turned to the off position, but it was still giving out plenty of residual heat. It was glorious. Reacher stripped off his gloves and held his hands out to it. Simple physics meant that it had to be cooling all the time, and maybe 3 hours from then it would be merely lukewarm, and 3 hours after that it would be stone cold, but right then it was completely magnificent. Still, too hot to touch, in fact. The combination of cast iron and recent hydrocarbon combustion was a wonderful thing. Reacher said, "You guys go search somewhere else. I'm staying right here." Peterson said, "With a bit of luck, they'll all be the same." They were. All three of them hustled to the farthest hut to check it out, and they found the same situation. Empty room, stripped beds, warm stove. They started the serious search right there. The warmth made them patient and painstaking. They checked every mattress, every cot frame, every nook and every cranny. They checked the toilet tank in the bathroom area. They looked for loose boards, listened for hollows in the walls, and opened every bulkhead light fixture. They found nothing. 5 to 3 in the afternoon. 13 hours to go.